Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. No, none of that. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody back. It's good to be back. I'm joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. Goosebumps. Okay, yeah, now I've lost track of what I was going to say. Maybe I'll just have to jump right into the prepared comments. Mm-hmm. I don't have any prepared comments. No, but I do have a message from my other brother, Daryl, with an update on Jay-Z. Since I just realized last week that Jay-Z was a male, although I think I figured that out once before, but then I had forgotten. And it's a sexually ambiguous name, Jay-Z. It could be a girl, could be a boy. But it turns out, according to my other brother, Daryl, and now I have not double-checked Daryl's sources on this. I'm trusting him completely. He says, number one, Jay-Z, self-proclaimed former crack dealer. Now, if that's not true, Daryl, we could get sued. But, I'm just going to roll with it. At least two attempted murders under his belt that we know of. He shot his brother for stealing from him and stabbed a record executive. An executive is in quotes. That means it's a hip-hop executive. Refer back to the crack dealer, yeah. Writes and performs songs where he fantasizes about raping women and killing children. Says that drug dealers were his heroes. That's number four on Daryl's list of Jay-Z's nine-faceted personality. Daryl claims that Jay-Z has amassed a fortune of over $800 million in the music business. Music in quotes. Refer back to the executive. Refer then back to the crack dealer notation. He's now also a sports agent. Number six, married to Beyonce. So you were correct on that one. That's the only thing we double-checked.
No, I mean, that's the only thing I knew.
That's the only thing you knew about Jay-Z. Don't have any of his records?
No.
No? Number seven, confirmed adulterer. Huh. That's quite the accusation there. Shocking, too, seeing that he's in the music biz, stabbed a music executive, and he's a former crack dealer. Number eight, friend of Barack Obama and Oprah Winfrey. A friend. Yeah, not necessarily allowed in their homes by himself, but he is a friend. Number nine, Daryl says, and we have not double-checked this, Daryl says an all-around pillar of the community is Mr. Jay-Z. Would it be Mr. Jay-Z or Mr. Z? Is Jay the first name and Z is the, he threw off his slave name or something and went with Z? You know, maybe it was like Jefferson or Washington. He didn't like that. I don't know. All right, so he's an all-around pillar of the community. We'll have to check that out, Daryl. But we do appreciate you helping me open the show as I was extremely distracted by my extremely attractive audio engineer. It's very hard. It's hard to stay focused when she's around. She shouldn't even be in the... I was watching a local news report the other night, as I'm often want to do, and they showed a bunch of middle-class, white-collar professionals doing a day of service. Have you heard of these? The day of service, yes. I was watching as accountants and cashiers and nurses and bus drivers. They all took the day off work. In fact, I think it was a Saturday, actually. And so they went and did their day of service. And I think, if I remember correctly, this particular day of service, they were building bike racks for the less fortunate. Now, if you're fortunate enough to have a bike, you need a bike rack. How unfortunate are you? But that's what they were doing on their day of service. And it was absolutely hilarious to watch these bankers, bus drivers, nurses, cashiers, as they tried to put together these large steel-framed bike racks. So this is what we've degenerated to in America. We're so guilt-ridden over the fact that we're so comfortable and we have virtually no significant problems that have plagued mankind for the last 5,000 years. We're not worried about our next meal. We're not worried about water to drink, keeping warm in the winter and cool in the summer. We don't worry about any of that stuff. At least us middle-class people who go to work every day, we don't. And so liberal people, now I don't feel guilty about it. Do you feel guilty about it at all? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. She doesn't feel any guilt. I don't feel any guilt about that. But people who don't believe in God, they have to find a way to ameliorate the guilt they feel for all the luxury and success and comfort that they have. And so they go out and they do a day of service. And here's what they do. They go out and they do something they have absolutely no idea how to do to try to help somebody else. So the unfortunate, less fortunate people in Montbello or wherever they were building this bike rack, they end up with a really lousy bike rack. Because all of these guilt-ridden liberals showed up and for the first time in their lives picked up a crescent wrench, you know. And anyways, it reminds me of the whole Habitat for Humanity thing. And if you haven't heard, I don't know if I've done Habitat for Humanity since we went back on the air in 2009. I did it years ago, probably. What year is this? It's 2018. I first went on the air in 1998. I probably did Habitat for Humanity 20 years ago because one of my family members is a relatively experienced construction hand. Let's just say he's handled a hammer. He can read a ruler, okay? He's put shingles on, okay? And he was forced by his employer to go to one of these days of service for the Habitat for Humanity. And he spent the whole day trying to rein in accountants and bookkeepers and nurses and cashiers who were smashing their hands and putting things up crooked. And I remember him telling me, he said, "I'll never do it again. I feel terrible. That house is it's a death trap built by a bunch of amateurs." So anyway, if you want to serve your fellow man, find something in your life that you can do that is of value to other people and do your best at it and go to work every day and serve your fellow man at a reasonable rate so that your fellow man believes he's getting a great deal because you're providing some phenomenal service or product. Just do that. That's the best way to serve one another, is to specialize and become very good at things and do things for people. And then you don't have to feel guilty about anything because you work hard. So anyway, there's my critique of the day of service. I really feel sorry for whoever locks their bike onto that rack there over in Montbello, and then they come back 45 minutes later and the bike will be gone because, well, the bike rack fell apart. But the liberals who put it together felt really good about themselves. They felt wonderful, just like the Habitat for Humanity people putting up the inferior housing product. They feel really good about themselves, though. Anyway, just go to work, all right? And get over yourself. Get over your whatever. All right. Let's see here. Now, we'll go to the news of the day. Should I? I believe I should. We have a story. This is just a strange story. I don't know why I feel compelled to invite you all to hear this story, but for some reason I do. An Indian man has been killed in India, by the way. Not a Native American, but an Indian from India. He's been killed after being sucked into an MRI machine at a hospital in Bombay. Did you know that could happen?
No.
I did not know that could happen. Maybe that's why I'm reading you this story for everyone out there, so that you know. The victim had entered the room, the MRI room, carrying a large oxygen cylinder. Apparently, that's a big mistake. Don't walk into an MRI room with a heavy metallic object. Yeah. The cylinder. Oh, this is just such a strange story. So he walks into the room. The MRI machine's supposed to be off. He's told by staff at the hospital, oh, it's okay. The power is off. Just take it. Will you carry this for me? So some lazy junior staff member at the hospital asked this fellow to carry the oxygen cylinder into the MRI room, told him, don't worry, the MRI machine's not on. Well, it was on. So he gets sucked into the MRI machine. The oxygen cylinder was damaged after hitting the machine, and this poor fellow actually died from inhaling the liquid oxygen that leaked out of the cylinder. What a freak story. I mean, you'd think he'd be sucked into the MRI machine and his head would be crushed by the large metallic cylinder, but no. Anyway, this is not the first time that something like this has happened, believe it or not. No. In 2014, two hospital workers sustained injuries when they were pinned between an MRI machine and a metal oxygen tank for 4 hours. That was in New Delhi, also in India. 2001, a six-year-old boy undergoing an MRI scan was killed when a metal oxygen tank flew towards the machine and crushed his skull. That was in New York. So be careful around the MRI machine. It's quite powerful magnetic. It's by the way, MRI stands for magnetic resonance imaging. Emphasis on the magnetic, apparently. Be careful.
If you have that thing, don't get
it. What's that? Yeah, if you got nose rings, if you're one of these pierced millennials, you might want to clear that stuff out before you go in for your MRI. You'll rip your nose right off. Anyway, I think the reason that caught my eye is because I recently heard again the interview with Robert Demadian, the inventor of the MRI. One of the most interesting stories you'll ever hear over at KGOV.com. Search MRI machine and just listen to the interview. It's fantastic. Young Earth creationist, Bible-believing Christian who invented the MRI and no doubt has more sense than to walk into the room with a large oxygen tank. He being a sensible, decent, honest Christian fellow. That's over at KGOV.com. Just search MRI. All right. Now, let's go here. From that, that was just a strange story. That's all. I want something, and it was a little depressing. So here's something to lift your spirits. Children in China have received new ears grown from their own skin cells and cartilage cells. This is tremendous. As reported by The Independent over in London, there's a fairly common deformity in children where one of their ears is deformed, malformed, or it's actually not even there. It's called microtia. And it's, currently, if your child is born with microtia, they'll have to wear silicone prosthetic ears. Or there is some reconstructive surgical techniques where they use cartilage from the ribs. But that has mixed results. And the ear never quite looks, you know, doesn't look as nice as the other ear. Well, there's a new technique in China that involves taking a scan of the child's unaffected ear, reversing the dimensions, and then 3D printing a biodegradable mold punctuated with tiny little holes. They then take cartilage cells from the unaffected ear. They take actual ear tissue, and they fill the little holes in the mold. And they set it up in the lab, and over several months, the cartilage cells begin to grow into the shape of the mold, and the biodegradable mold begins to break down, go away. And while this is happening, at a certain point, the ear is grafted onto the recipient's skull there, and that's just phenomenal. 3D printing a biodegradable mold and then growing an ear. That's I'm very impressed. Now that is science. And when this ear, as the mold begins to break down and the ear begins to take shape, no one in the lab ever assumes that the ear just evolved by random processes. We came into the lab and there was an ear. It's amazing. And you were one with the cause. And a reason to be. You were a fighter for peace on this earth. And you were never afraid. You put your life on the line. And you were always alone. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. That was awesome. One of the top five guitar solos ever, right? Nobody can argue with that. Nobody can argue with that. All right, now we go from what was a very uplifting story to a bad Pope story. Yes, the Pope's gone bad once again. Last week we had the first schizophrenic Pope file story. Now we have just another bad Pope file story here. Pope Francis, who so far, in my opinion, is a pretty lousy pope. He is about to accept the legitimacy of seven Catholic bishops appointed not by the Holy See, not by the Pope and the cardinals and the smoke and the Latin chanting and all that they do. No, these bishops were appointed by the communist Chinese government, as they have been for the last 70 years or so. But for the past history, since China's been communist, the Vatican hasn't recognized the Chinese bishops. Because the atheist communist Chinese don't have the right to choose the bishops of a church. At least that was the position of the Vatican in the past. But now the Pope says he will recognize the bishops in hopes of... let me read the story. In hopes of what here? Well, I don't know that there's hope of anything. It's as if the Pope's just tired of arguing. Just let's just go with it. We'll roll with it, whatever. Okay, so there you go. For no good reason at all, other than, I guess, well, everyone else has rolled over for the Chinese. Maybe the Vatican is looking for some low-cost manufacturing options, and they want to open up. I don't know. Why would he do this? I don't get it. At a time when the communist government in China is persecuting Christians at levels unseen in the history of China. The bulldozing churches and arresting people and busting up house churches. I just don't get it. The Pope wants to, maybe he's a lead from behind Barack Obama kind of guy. You know, he figures that the nicer he is, the better chance he'll have of... Well, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. All we can say is bad Pope. Bad. Bad Pope. Smack his nose. Rub his nose in it. Bad Pope. Don't. All right. So that's it. That's the bad Pope. Meanwhile, hey, you know what that reminds me? I've got to get to, hold on, I've got to find it here. I didn't have this in order, but that. So from the Real Religion file, the Christian Post reported that this week, in fact, February 1st was the day, the anniversary of the martyrdom of 26 Christians in the Japanese city of Nagasaki. Now, we've all heard of Nagasaki, right? Because of, you know, the bomb and all that. It's very unfortunate. But I had never heard of this, well, until I met my extremely attractive audio engineer. But I didn't know it was in Nagasaki, and I hadn't really looked into the details. But apparently on February 5th, 1597, 400 and some odd years ago, 26 Christians were crucified at Nagasaki, including 6 foreign-born missionaries and 20 Japanese Christians. And this mass crucifixion, they weren't only crucified either. If you read the, I'll post this up. You can read about it. It represented only the beginning of a national wave of violent persecution of the shogun against the Christians. Estimates range up to over 100,000 Christians killed merely for being Christians. I guess the Spanish Catholics had had quite a bit of success starting missions, churches. They had converted an estimated 200,000 practicing Christians in Japan there by the end of the 14th century. But possibly 100,000 killed. Another 100,000 were dispossessed or exiled or abused in other fashion. So anyway, the February 5th is the date that the emperor and his minister, his chief minister, Toyotomi Hideyoshi, ordered the crucifixion of 26 martyrs there in Nagasaki, Japan. So there you have that. And so unlike the Pope, these were good Catholics. They went to their death for their faith. So I don't know if the Pope would do that. The Pope, he doesn't want the Chinese to cut off his internet or something. He's willing to roll over for a bunch of savage atheist murderers. My, how the Catholic Church has changed, right? All right, now let's go on from the culture file. So we all heard the story of the Riverside County couple, David and Louise Turpin, who had the 13 children chained and variously locked and imprisoned there in their home. They were malnourished and abused. We all heard the story, right? Well, now the legislature in California has taken to note the apparent significance in their minds of the fact that the Turpins were homeschoolers. That's right. They were registered with the county as homeschoolers. And so legislators in California are now assuming that homeschooling is a risk factor for abuse, and they want to pass some new regulations. They have some suggested measures. Do the pile of atheists and perverts running the state of California as to how to better regulate homeschooling. What is the pile of perverts and queers and transgendered atheists, thieves, and liars there running the state of California? They suggest possibly homeschoolers should be subject to an involuntary quarterly home visit. A home visit. Yes, but from Child Protective Services. Maybe the police, maybe some other government agencies could just pop in on homeschoolers. Yeah. This is being reported by the Washington Examiner. Yes, the legislators, the pile of atheists and perverts running California, they think that that this story, this one story of one freak whack job couple out in Riverside County, well, that means that homeschooling parents are more likely to be child abusers. Yes, yes. Now, the Washington Examiner reports that the data really doesn't support that idea. In fact, studies have been published by secular organizations, the World Health Organization, the U.S. Commission to Eliminate Child Abuse and Neglect Fatalities. That sounds like a government office, right? The U.S. Commission to Eliminate Child Abuse and Neglect Fatalities. Well, just the fatalities is what this committee focuses on. If you go down the hall, there's another office with some other bureaucrats who focus on injuries. But our office focuses on eliminating the fatalities associated with child abuse. Anyway, that's a government, obviously a federal government operation. Studies have also been published by the American Psychological Association and the Mayo Clinic. And none of them, and they all published risk factors for child abuse and neglect. Well, none of them listed homeschooling. It never even made it on the radar of these major secular studies. So there's really no evidence that homeschooling is a risk factor. In fact, the examiner reports that the data suggests the complete opposite. They go into how homeschooling allows you to customize your education for your students, a lot of one-on-one teacher-student interaction, which is so important, and the lack of bullying. That's right. You don't have to worry about your kid going to school and getting beaten up by the bully because your kid doesn't go to school. And then, of course, now that doesn't even get into the obvious risk factors for actually sending your children into the government schools, which I'm going to get into right now, because they're well documented. Well documented. In fact, this week alone, we have reasons number 1,121, 22, and 23 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. It's as obvious as the nose on your face. It's a risky situation. Sending your kid down into the public school factory to be abused by other students and to be taught by teachers outright utter lies and fabrications. And then there's that they could be dangled from a second story balcony like this kid at San Francisco's Marshall Elementary School. Yes, a CBS in San Francisco reports that a teacher at Marshall Elementary was seen dangling a student from a second floor balcony and has been arrested. The student apparently survived and there was no harm, but the student was dangled. The school immediately contacted the parent of the involved student, and the teacher was placed on paid administrative leave, as you can well imagine. Did you catch that? The school immediately contacted the parent. Yes, I know. Is that too much that I noticed that? I apologize. I hope I haven't offended anyone. But I notice things like that. There's no further information as to why the teacher dangled the student. But the teacher is on paid administrative leave just for good measure. All right. And that was in California, where they think homeschooling is a risk factor. So we have one story of one freak whack job couple out in, where was that? San Bernardino, Bakersfield? Where was that? Riverside County. You got one story and the legislature is ready to move. Meanwhile, we have the daily torrent of bullying, torture, and abuse that happens in the public schools. Not to mention the shootings. Let's mention a shooting. Reason number 1,122. A 12-year-old girl's in custody after she shot two other kids. Yes, listen to this. The LA Times reports that gunfire erupted and a shooting left two students injured. Why they arrested the girl, I don't know. It's as if the 15-year-old boy, gunshot wound to the head, 15-year-old girl shot in the wrist. Investigators are trying to determine whether it was intentional or a terrible accident. The school police chief, right there. That should be a red flag to all of you parents out there in the LA Unified School District. If your school has a police chief, you might want to reconsider sending your kids there. So that was back in the days when all Eddie could afford was reverb. That's all he could get. It's, yeah, you know, that was back when reverb was the only available. All right, nobody gets that except me. Maybe one other person listening will get that, but me. All right, so we were in the LA Unified School District where the girl shot two people. No, I'm sorry, gunfire erupted and left two students injured. For some reason, they arrested a 12-year-old. Listen to this. The police chief, Steve Zipperman, he says, that's his name, Zipperman. Steve Zipperman. He said he did not know how a young person got access to a gun and brought it to campus. And everybody looked at him and said, what are you talking about? You don't know. What about all the mass shootings that have been happening across the country for the last 25 years? You're still maybe you're the police chief here, are you, Mr. Zipperman? All right. Well, maybe you need a desk job or something, buddy. You don't know how? Well, anyway, well, the reason he doesn't know is because the Los Angeles Unified School District, according to the LA Times, requires every middle and high school campus to conduct daily random searches for weapons using metal-detecting wands. So if you're sending your young, defenseless child into a place where they're going to be wanded for armaments, perhaps that's a red flag. Maybe. Maybe that, maybe not. Maybe you're okay with that. Me personally, I don't go for that. If they have to be wanded for firearms, I don't send my kids there. That's all. And now the LA city attorney, Mike, he had a message for parents. Okay, so the kids are shot at the school, which is a whole government operation. Instead of taking responsibility and apologizing to people for the obvious failure of the LA Unified School District, the LA city attorney says, hey, parents, Los Angeles has a law about safe storage of weapons. Every responsible gun owner needs to take heed. You idiots need to lock up your guns. We can't control these kids. We taught them that they evolved from slime and that they're going into oblivion. Yeah, what do you expect? Lock up your guns. These kids can't be trusted with guns. You people are idiots. Well, I made some of that up. But that's kind of the way it comes off to me. The LA city attorney starts chastising parents or some unknown parent out there for not locking up the guns instead of apologizing for being a part of a government that has created a bunch of uncontrolled maniacs. Anyway, I had guns growing up all the time. We had guns, lots of guns. I think there was no time in my life where there weren't at least 20 guns in our house, 19 of them being loaded at all times. And my friends, we all had guns. We would go shooting and hunting, shooting birds, shooting snakes, which I regret now. We shot horny toads, which I regret now. I would never do that again. But we never shot each other. Well, I mean, not on purpose anyway. We never shot each other on purpose. Well, only with BB guns. But that was when we were younger. But when we were older and we knew the danger of a gun. Anyway, and we all had a common sense of morality that if you did something like that, God was going to judge you and you were going to go to hell. Not only would you go to prison and possibly be executed, that scared us. But we all understood that you would stand before God and that you would go to hell, and that prevents people from doing a lot of crazy things. If this 12-year-old girl had the fear of God, she probably wouldn't have brought this gun to school. And it turns out now they're saying it was a terrible accident, by the way, just so you know. The gun went off in the girl's backpack. Yeah. So anyway. But they've raised a generation of children with no fear of God. And then the government chastises the parents. Well, and the parents should be chastised, frankly, for handing the kids over. Now, speaking of guns, so I'm a little under the weather. I've been suffering from some sort of some sort of infection. I refuse to admit it's the flu because I hate being a part of the latest fad. It's just not me. I'm a contrarian in that respect. So I don't think it was the flu. Plus, I think I would have gotten a lot sicker if it was the actual flu. I just had some bug all week. And then it's been cold, right? So I've been miserable and suffering to a certain degree. And then we've had a predator. We now have a predator here at the McBurney compound. It's an as-of-yet unidentified predator, but it has taken two perfectly healthy roosters who have disappeared from the face of the earth. They're gone. And so we know there's a predator. And so I, in addition to being generally miserable and sick and just jaded, because I just am. I mean, I'm generally jaded and pessimistic already.
Really?
Now, lay on that, I'm sick, and then it's cold outside, and then I have to grab my rifle and walk the perimeter of the McBurney compound at dusk today looking for the predator. Didn't find him, didn't spot him. I imagine he's full right now, so he might not be back tonight. But we have been invaded by a predator, and we've been theorizing about what the predator could be. Could be a coyote, it could be a fox, it could be a dog. Those are the three top candidates. And after the bird whisperer inspected the footprints this afternoon, we're pretty sure it's a dog. And that's the worst possible scenario. That's the worst, because if it's a fox, you could deal with that. It's a wild animal. There's measures that can be taken that will not disrupt the social fabric of the neighborhood. If it's a coyote, even easier. You just kill it. Kill it at first sight, and everyone's happy. All your neighbors will be happy. But it's a dog, which means it's more than likely one of our neighbor's dogs. And that's the worst possible scenario, because a wild animal you can deal with. People, on the other hand, that can be very difficult. So if it turns out that it's one of the neighbor's dogs, then we identify which neighbor. Now there has to be a social interaction over the fact that your dog ate my chickens on my property. That's uncomfortable. I mean, even if you go into the you knock on the neighbor's door, and you're in the right. The dog came into your yard and ate your chickens. It's still very uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable thing to have to deal with. So that's why I'm generally not in a good mood. I'm not looking forward to that conversation. No. And I'm not just going to. Now, one of my daughters, as we were driving home from Denver Bible Church this morning, one of the younger girls said, "Daddy, can we shoot the neighbor's dog if it's the neighbor's dog?" No. She said, "Do we have the right to shoot the dog?" I said, "Well, we have the right to shoot the dog, but that might not be the wisest course of action. We might want to be a little bit more diplomatic is the word I'm looking for." And so, see, I've matured. In my younger days, I would have just relished the idea of just shooting the neighbor's dog and then tossing him up onto the neighbor's porch. But that would be my way of letting the neighbor know that your dog's been eating my chickens. But no, not anymore. Having children definitely civilizes a person. It helps you look at things in a different way. So I highly encourage all of you to do just that. Have a bunch of kids. That'd be good for you. Okay, now we go. Reason number 1,123 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. I don't want to leave this off. They're being indoctrinated with social justice lies. Just a pile of untruths and lies and misstatements. And just general overall deceit. Your children are being deceived and lied to and turned into brainwashed little social justice worry warts. And we go to Edina, Minnesota. Edina, Minnesota, I said, where school leaders have adopted the all-for-all strategic plan. You've heard of one for all? Not anymore. That's chauvinistic. To have Superman or some hero come in, one for all. No. Or all for one. That was it. I'm sorry. It's all for one, right? Anyway, we can't have that anymore. That's too paternalistic and too, all of that. So now it's all for all, and it's really about they pitch it in the context of equality and fairness. That's what they're going to teach your kids about. But what they're really going to teach your kids is that being white, they should feel guilty about being white. It's all about, according to the Weekly Standard, It's about uprooting white privilege. Yeah. For example, kindergarten through second grade, they participate in the Melanin Project. And now this is not like pre-med for dermatology. This is the Melanin Project. It's all about white privilege. They trace their hands and they color the hands to reflect their skin tone. And then they place the cutouts on a poster and then they write on it, "Stop thinking your skin color is better than anyone else's. Everyone is special." It's poor grammar there anyway. The elementary school up there in Edina has a new racially conscious elementary school teacher who runs a blog where the teacher regularly shares postings from Black Lives Matter. Rainbow gay pride flags are regularly featured in the principal's blog. A banner proclaiming gay marriage is our right. She recommended an ABC book for children. A is for activist. F is for feminist. C is for creative counter to corporate vultures.
Did you make that up?
And T is for trans. No, I'm not making that up. This is a book that the principal recommended to the hapless, defenseless little children whom he, she, or it is abusing. I don't know who this principal is. I don't want to mention her name or his name because they may not even identify. They could be a cis person, and you don't want to offend them. A course description. Now, that's second grade, okay? Kindergarten, that's the little kids. A course description of an 11th grade U.S. literature and composition course. Well, that's encouraging to think that any public school still has a literature and composition course. I'm actually shocked at that. But this description says that if you take this particular U.S. literature and composition course, they say, quote, by the end of the year, you will have learned how to apply Marxist, feminist, post-colonial, and psychoanalytical lenses to literature. So they take a perfectly good thing like literature and composition, and they foul it all up with feminism, Marxism, psychoanalytical, and I'm sure cisgendered homosexualism and all that stuff. All right. So there you go. Reason number 1,123 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. They will learn how to apply Marxist, feminist, post-colonial, psychoanalytical, melanin, stress, homosexualist garbage to something as simple as literature. McBurney,
thank you very much.
Now that'll pick up the spirit. It's just a nice beat to pick up the spirit. You know what's interesting about hanging out with someone who, for whom English was not their first language, is that you can listen to all kinds of music because, well, they have no idea what the words mean, and it's just all about the beat and the hook and the riff and the, you know, the solo. It was great. Because you get too far into it, and then it gets, you know. Although I have no idea what he was talking about there. That's just a pointless, happy song. That's all. which is fine. All right, now we move to the most important story of the week. And I'm not saying that facetiously. I'm serious. This is an op-ed piece by David Brooks in the New York Times. David Brooks, if you're not familiar, he is a shameless leftist propaganda minister. As much a member of the deep state as anyone in the FBI or the State Department or the Department of Justice. He's part of the deep left. I don't want to say that. Anyway, he's part of a deep something that's not good. Let's just say that. David Brooks, also part of the pro-choice industry. You've heard us talk about the pro-life industry here on the show. That's people who act like they're pro-life, but they really just make a living acting like they're pro-life. And they gin up donations, and then they pass legislation or they endorse legislation that maybe looks like it could possibly be pro-life, but then in the end it ends up not being. And it's 40 years later, and they're headed for the retirement in Bimini. So that's the, but this is David Brooks, part of the pro-choice industry, because there's a similar industry on the other side. The only difference is they actually believe in what they're doing. They're just, let's just let David Brooks speak for himself, because his op-ed piece in the Times was titled The Abortion Memo. And I don't know if other hosts will realize that this was the most important thing written this past week, but I did. David Brooks writes, last week I watched our Democrat senators vote down the Republican bill that would have banned abortions after 20 weeks. And it left me wondering, how much is our position on late-term abortion hurting us, said David Brooks. See, the thing about the left is they're evil. And they're not ashamed of being evil. They just come right out and say evil things. Like, hey, we're talking about murdering all these children, torturing them, burning them, ripping them apart, destroying the lives of the mothers and the fathers who are involved in this horrible act of child murder. For millions and millions of people, we've been doing this for my entire career. Could this be hurting us? David Brooks' concern is about himself and his political party and his political agenda, and he's evil enough to just come right out and say it. He's not like the Republicans who will lie right to your face and act like they actually care about pro-family social issues and then turn around and fully fund the people murdering children, teaching our kids to be queers and freaks. Anyway, David Brooks, he's a respectable evil person. That's all. You gotta give him credit that he's just flat out evil. And he goes on to say, before Roe, many leading anti-abortion groups were on the left. Now, I did not know this because abortion's been legal ever since I was born. Abortion was legal in the state I was born, in the year I was born, and it's been legal, so I didn't know this. Yes, he goes on, he says there was a pro-life rally that was led by the National Youth Pro-Life Coalition, which was a liberal group, the National Catholic Welfare Conference, back before Roe, when murdering children was being legalized state by state. The Catholics, they were demanding a living wage, a right to collective bargaining, and the right to life from the moment of conception. So the liberals back then weren't so evil that they would advocate murdering children. I mean, there were some limits to what even the left would do. In 1971, as a matter of fact, David Brooks reports, Ted Kennedy declared, wanted or unwanted, I believe that human life, even at its earliest stages, has certain rights which must be recognized. The right to be born, the right to love, the right to grow old. That was Ted Kennedy before Roe versus Wade. By 1973, of course, Brooks goes on, Roe v. Wade changed all that. And listen to what Brooks reports. He says, at first, people didn't understand what the Roe versus Wade decision meant. They didn't know. So I've always wondered, how is it that people weren't marching in the streets the day after that happened? It's because it happened in the dark in a relatively arcane Supreme Court ruling that there was no law passed. There was no vote. There was no showdown at high noon and abortion was legalized. No, it was done in secret in the dark, quietly. And then slowly, Planned Parenthood started building abortion clinics. And they just started killing children. And it kind of happened in the shadows. And it's as if we woke up 20 years later in the 80s, in the late 80s, we woke up 15 years later and we realized we're murdering 1.5 million children a year. And then the rescue movement came along. Anyway, it's just it's helpful to understand where we came from. And this evil bastard, David Brooks, he's taught me a couple of things here. And what the most thing he's taught me is that the left are purely Machiavellian and utterly utilitarian in their outlook. And they'll come right out and tell you, which he does right here. He says, do we Democrats want late-term abortion so much that we're willing to tolerate President Trump? Do we want it so much that we give up our chance at congressional majorities? Do we want it so much that we see our agendas on poverty, immigration, income equality, and racial justice thwarted and defeated? See, David doesn't care about butchering children. He's good with that. He wants to analyze, how does this, is this a winning political strategy? So this is the heart of, the dark heart of pure evil resides in the chest of David Brooks. And we're here witnessing it. And thankfully, we're not close enough to David Brooks that he might actually kill us. Anyway, here's what Brooks says about the Democratic Party and their insatiable desire to slaughter children. He says, hey, Democrats, we need to acknowledge our vulnerability here. We need to acknowledge our vulnerability here. It's a political vulnerability that he has recognized. He goes on to say, look, millennials aren't as rabidly pro-abort as we are. They're more interested in advancing the homosexual agenda, social justice, sustainability. That's what they care about. So David Brooks is basically saying, maybe we should be like the Republicans. Give some lip service to maybe act like we're not wanting to kill every child. Maybe we would do better politically. Listen to how he goes on. He says, he starts talking about why this is a problem. He says, look, we're looking at fetuses earlier and earlier. Science is telling us that the fetuses are cognitively active. David Brooks says fetuses prefer to look at a face-like image while in the womb. Fetuses can recognize and distinguish between tastes. They can recognize words, tunes, and languages. And then he actually says, it could be, Democrats, this is my advice for you, Democrats, it could be that one of the current behaviors that future generations will regard as most barbaric is our treatment of fetuses. So he's staring the fact that he could be a murderer right in the face. He's right up against admitting that, hey, maybe we've been wrong about murdering all these people. He's right up there at the precipice. And then he falls back and he says, the fact is young voters don't like the Republicans' total ban, but they don't like our position either. I'm asking us, the Democrats, to rethink our priorities. Don't rethink maybe we should stop murdering innocent people. Let's rethink how we bamboozle voters. Maybe we should take a lesson from Bob Dole and the Republicans and just give some lip service, because a lot of people are apparently uncomfortable with the whole idea of abortion. And maybe there's just a better way to play this, says David Brooks. And David Brooks concludes. Well, I don't know if he concluded. This is where I stopped reading. He says, one of our talking points, the Democrats, is that late-term abortions are extremely rare. If they are extremely rare, my Democrat colleagues, why are we giving them priority over all of our other issues combined? So David Brooks is having a hard time understanding why it is the Nancy Pelosi's and the other rabid, frothing-at-the-mouth pro-aborts aren't willing to give in on this issue a little bit so that they can win on other issues. So a complete utilitarian, Machiavellian, dark-hearted, evil argument from the heart of darkness here, David Brooks. And at the very end, he really doesn't understand. So this guy is going straight to hell with jet rockets. I think he's incapable of repenting. So people have asked me, is it possible that there are people who cannot be redeemed? And I think there are. And I think David Brooks is one of them. And the reason is he's not able to understand the gravity of the sin in which he has participated. He's not able to contemplate and understand that. He looks at it as a political talking point. Hey, isn't there a better way that we could switch up our priorities? Maybe not kill every child that we want to kill. And so when you're unable, and so he doesn't understand why the froth at the mouth pro-aborts are not willing to give one inch. It's because they can at least comprehend the gravity and the depth of depravity to which they have sunk. And they know they can't step back one millimeter. When you're in that deep, you can't move a millimeter, David. But David can't even comprehend the depth of the sin. So David Brooks, unsalvageable, on his way to hell with jet rockets. And I hope he lives a long life and nothing bad happens to him, because eternity's a long time to be that deep, Dave-O. That's all. All right. Now, that was the most important story of the week. So now we'll move on to something that's, well, it's maybe not as important, but it is equally worthy of a public airing from the Culture File. The game company Hasbro has released the Cheater's Edition of Monopoly. It's a Monopoly version that encourages players to break the rules. There are 15 cheat cards. And they encourage the players to cheat in various ways, from collecting the rent on other players' properties or stealing money from the bank. And listen to this. Players who successfully cheat are rewarded in the game, while those who are caught cheating are penalized. So the executives at Hasbro should be arrested. This should not be allowed. Anyway, maybe you think this is just kind of chuckle funny, because I heard this on the local news, and they kind of chuckled about it. It's so cute and funny. They should be arrested for teaching young people that morality is something that, well, in this case, they're literally teaching them it's a game, but it's not a game. And teaching someone that they could be rewarded temporarily for cheating, well, that's child abuse. And there was a time in this country when this could never happen. But now we have the cheater's version of Monopoly, and we have a show on TV called Lucifer. It's actually on TV. It's called Lucifer. And so welcome to the brave new world. We're here. We're in deep. All right. What else? Do I have something to end? Chemical castration for child molesters in Oklahoma. There's a Republican, he wants to give them chemical pills to, anyway, that's ridiculous. Even straight up physical castration should not be considered for child molesters, because they should be dead. There's no need to castrate someone if they're dead. All right, let's see. Ah, yes, finally, ladies and gentlemen, I remembered the word. I wouldn't have been able to do this story if I hadn't been listening to Real Science Radio. But listen to this. BBC is reporting that a sprawling network of buildings in a Mayan city has been discovered under the Guatemalan jungle. So it's always been assumed that the Mayans had these relatively small enclaves. Well, there's a new technology called LIDAR, which is short for light detection and ranging. They're able to look beneath the canopy in the jungle. And they say that the size of these cities in Central America, these Mayan cities, they actually they resemble cities the size of ancient Grecian cities, ancient Chinese cities. They're elaborate and they're quite large. And they've been viewed by LIDAR, light detection and ranging. LIDAR technology unveils archaeological finds almost invisible to the naked eye, according to the BBC, especially in the tropics where there's triple canopy of vegetation and jungle foliage. It uses laser light to densely sample the surface of the Earth. They fire it from a plane or a helicopter. That's right. The wavelengths are measured as they bounce back, which is not unlike how a bat uses sonar to hunt. Pretty cool, huh? That is just amazing. So here, scientists are advancing real science by mimicking the creator of the universe and the creatures that he made. It's a whole field in creation science. It's called biomimetics, because we admit we're copying the creator. But that's what we've all been doing since the beginning of time with all of our technologies. Biomimetics, it's really cool. Hey, and one more thing on the Mayans. They were a lot like the Greeks as far as the size of their cities, but they still never figured out the wheel, which is pretty embarrassing. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Should the Lord tarry, we'll be back next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.